You are listening to BensTorah.com.
All of a sudden, when I worry about Chayisha, and you can take the chance. Nobody says you look leave to do it, but I can take the chance. The Taisus on top of the page, quotation C, asks the question, I don't understand, says Taisus. I just told you to ignore Mesechus Yayma, Tidim Machal Shabbos, with all different types of Sveikas, the Chayisha, Chayisha, Chashinim. And this Gemara is telling me, I'm not worried about Chayisha, Chashinim. I'm able to risk that to go to this type of doctor who might wipe out my Chayesha. I'm allowed to risk the Chayesha. So how do I reconcile these two Gemaras? So Tyson gives a very logical answer on top, which we pass on. Let me read the case very quickly with you. But I'm reading the Yonah, this is a quotation see on the top of the page. Ah, l'chush l'chayesha. And he says, ah, l'chashinim. But Ike, therefore, the Hachav Hassan, the obvious question is, if they're Chayshu B'Chayisha, and he was saying, Agamah L'Chayisha L'Chashin, and how do we reconcile these two Gemaras? So says Taisa a very simple, logical answer. He says, the Ike, L'Meimah, the Hachav Hacham, Avdinin L'Tavasa. Both the Gemara and the Sech Nisyoma, and the Gemara here, Mesechta V'Dezara, have one common denominator. We're doing what we think is potentially beneficial to the patient. Adil Tavasal. The Hasam Imwas Sachlush Yomus. There. If you don't can try to help him with this Chayisha, he's going to go even quicker. Vahaka Im Tachlush. And here, if you go out of your way to be too overly concerned with what the doctor's going to do, Lo Yisrapa, you know, the Chavim. Vav Yomus, he's surely going to die. So says Taisa, the common denominator is when you're chayish v'chayish or not has one common denominator. Is it beneficial to the patient or not? In Mesech this Yoma, we're chayish v'chayish to take him out of the traumatized situation, to marachayim a little bit. Here we're going to allow a person's chayish to be jeopardized momentarily. For the sake of maybe the doctor might be able to do the miracles to this guy that he's done to others in the past, and therefore take the chayisha and give the person chayah olam. So there's no contradiction, it's just contextually, on a linguistic level looks like a contradiction, but conceptually both are aiming for one thing, to prolong the life of the person as much as we possibly can. And therefore that's why there's no contradiction. The most halachic part of this daf is what's the proof of Rabbi Yochanan? You say this based upon Svara. So, you know, it's one thing sometimes I'm around tonight say things Svara-y. But over here they call it a case. The famous case of Gechsi and his sons, who when Gechsi violated Elisha's Tzav, Tanakh, he was stricken with leprosy the rest of his life. Not only he, but his children. He was basically living outside the Arichama of Eretzol because the Mitzvah can't enter the Arichama because they have the Kedusha of a Machane Yisrael. Mitzvah have to be Mechut for Machane. But there was no Mitzvah going into the city, walled city, because they were starving from a famine there. Because they were under siege by the Syrian army. So they were outside the city gate starving, or people inside the city starving because there was no food. And there was a gigantic army that was encamped around them, ready to befall the city and to cause a tremendous korban over there. So the Gemara records that Gechsi and his kids had the following discussion. And they said the following. And of course, the pasuk from Sefer Malachim. He says, Im amanu nova here, if we want to go and force ourselves into the city, there's a family there, we're going to die in the city anyway. And therefore, if that's the case, there's no purpose going in there, but there is a Syrian army camped around. And maybe if they see a bunch of Mitzrayim, Chanka mentioned, coming and begging for food, maybe it's over the Shtika Rachmanis. We're not a threat to them militarily. So maybe we'll have a Shtika Rachmanis and give us food. Maybe they'll make us avodah for them, or work for them. But there's a possibility we can save our lives because they surely have food to eat and drink to give us. So let's take a chance. What do we have to lose? They might save us. They might kill us. We're going to die anyway. So they use that as a raya. You're able to masaki in chayesha for chayeiwa. Now, I don't know, you and I would have ran to Gechsi and Bonav as a proof text for a halakhic concept. And believe me, I've looked around and rolled the tshuva, so Moshe was very bothered by it. Because when the world that gets to become the Gadol Hadar that we paisek based upon his svava, how to conduct ourselves halakhically. But we have a principle in halakha that there were thousands of Nevi'im that were misnaben during the history of Klal Yisrael Babayis Risha. But we don't have thousands of Sifrei Nacht. And the Gemara says Megillah, Nevuah Shetzrich L'Daraus was committed to writing. Nevuah Shein Tzrich L'Daraus was not committed to writing. If they included the narrative of the Gef Sivanov in Sefer Malachim as part of Tanakh, it means there is a limud generations from what they did as being something halakhically acceptable, which the Rabban Shem wanted to preserve in the narrative over here. Gefsi was an Anabi, but the way he conducted himself was he had divine approval of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were Mechav in the MS, so they told the Nevi'im to record this episode because he can learn from this the Musav Shmuz, you can Asaki Chai Shof and Chai Chai Halak. So, not that Gefsi was the place of Hagar, but sometimes the person who's an ignorant fool can sometimes come up with a truthful, conceptual, practical answer to something. And some claim, based upon Yerushalmi's, the Gefsi, since he was the Meshoras of Elisha for many years, was a pretty big Talmud Chacham himself. He might have done something wrong, for which he got a curse. But, you know, they say that the Rebbe Yehuda Nasi's Shifcha, she was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Many times she wasn't there, the Talmud used to ask her the Sheol, and she used to tell what Rebbe used to paskin. So, if you have the Shifcha of Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, basically paskin in Sheolas, you know, and Chazal mentioning that, so Getzi, who was Masharis, and her Halisha paskin, you know, he had pretty much knowledge as well. In any event, that's the Gemara. But now we come to the real nitty-gritty. Okay. So, using this as an example, now the fact of the matter is, these guys were going to die from famine without a question, besides the tzaraas, the sickness they had. So they were taking a chance, but we're dealing over here with not a person who's going to die anyway because of a famine. We're dealing with, and we're not dealing with human rachmanis. We're dealing over here with people who have a devastating disease that's going to kill them, and whether you could undertake a dangerous medical treatment, surgery or medicine that's being humanly administered by a doctor that can either save you and cure you or kill you on the spot, it's not exactly zeh shavah lazeh. So the question is, Afa Pike, Chazal, Paskin this, and in Shulchan Aruch itself, just for your knowledge, the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeya, in Simin Kuf Nunhei, Paskin's this Gemara that you can masake in Chai Shofa the Sechai. So it's brought down Halach Lamasa in Shofan Arach. So now we come to the interesting part. Going back to page number 8, the Shvus Yaakov, who we started with tonight, basically speaking, points out when it comes to Shailas like this, his first opening expression is, in number E, he says, Dina the Fasha is Ksarek we as Muslimo, we come to such life threatening decisions. You gotta be very, very clear minded and very careful in your deliberation before you implement. And we have a principle come Abinefesh Akaski Ibn Bala Alay, human life is of such infinite value, when you destroy human life, you destroy an entire world. And when you save a life, you save an entire world. So we have to take a lot of we call Kaivah Harosh to be careful before we make a definitive decision. He then points out Gemara's and Shulchan Aruch quotes, I quoted it 2-3 weeks ago, that a person who is a ghost is holding by the end, that you can't do anything without, that's not medically justifiable for this person. He can't even close their eyes or stop preparing the body for post-death preparation, for the fear you might traumatize them inappropriately, make them die even earlier. So the fact is you have to be very careful when it comes to physically even handling these people, let alone doing an operation and giving them medicine. At the end of the day, he quotes the Gemara in Yoma, he quotes the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, he brings the Yishuv of Tosfos, and he therefore says at the end that in this specific case, I'm going down to G because I want to get to the bottom line, which is quoted by the Poskim, Over here, Rabbis, we see quotation G.
Yeah.
So look what he says. He says, I want you to know that calls of Haskamas a poskim, etc. What does the poskim say? Shavada Yamus, that if a person is definitely going to die, Manichan Havada Vitefsin Asafik. You can basically leave the Vadai death phenomenon that's facing you and grab a hold of the Safik, or perhaps Rafu will work over here. Ula Yisrape. The Kamakam Ein La'asos Arefi Pshuto. The doctor, one doctor should not make the decision. Rak Tzarech Liyosmos of Ovidava. And what should he do? He says, Lefakeich Imrofa Mumchim Shabir, to ask other specialists in the city who are experts like him in this. Al Pi Rov Hadeos, the Hainu Rov Haminka, Shukafu. For him to come to a decision as a doctor to do this, he can't rely upon 51% of other doctors agreeing with him. He needs 70% of what doctors are available for them to be called the Reva Kafo. That if they say, you're right, this is the only chance we have to save him, and rogue doctors, which means 70% agree with this doctor, he can go ahead. And so says Yishvus Yaakov. He also points out that besides that, you also need Haskamas HaFachim Be'iri, and you need a rabbinical medical ethicist specialist to give a psak of heter to do it. But he says, you're allowed there for the Masak and Chayashot HaChayolam. That's the psak that he gives. That you can do it. And the Gemara by the Zohar is the basic source, psak and Shulchan Aruch. But now we're going to come down to the prakim. This is very important. The whole thing up until now, we discussed general statements. Now we're coming when you can implement this. The first thing that Ramosha and all the Gedolim point out from this sugya, the way the Shulchan Aruch formulates it, is that the Masakin Chai Shavah Chai Olam, where the level of success is minimal in nature, 10%, 20% success, most of the time it's not, is optional and not obligatory. That's number one. Where most refuahs, where the rov are saved, there it's obligatory, and according to Jewish law, where you don't have to worry about informed consent, you could have been kaifa the chayla to accept. I pointed out that with today's informed consent, I wouldn't force anybody to do anything, because you're going to be in jail and lose your medical license, be fined before you know it. You will, you'll be out of, you know, maybe you might not survive all of that. So the fact is, because the dima chusadina, informed consent, except an emergency patient. Emergency patient, the law is, there's what's called inferred informed consent. So therefore, that's why doctors don't have to have a person who's unconscious in the emergency room, have to sign a document to give approval to do what has to be done. But a person who still has a seichel or mishpacha, and it's not that emergency patient, you need informed consent. But lahalacha, you could have forced al karka because of al-samay to accept it. But that's only when the rove people are nitzalim. Over here, where rov are ain't selling, it is an option. And if the doctor says, I'm not going to undertake this operation, and many times doctors don't want to do it because they don't want to ruin their record. But many doctors, when they want to get reimbursed by the insurance company, if they have too many deaths caused by them, you know as well as I do that getting a bad record like that ain't good for the insurance company to pay your patients for your malpractice. Yeah, so therefore, many doctors will not take such cases because I don't want to be in hospitals many times, even slum. They're not going to work in a case where they know they're going to fail because they don't want to ruin their statistics and their reputation and their insurance reimbursement. Let's be honest, the business of medicine. So over here, this is purely optional. Mitzad the patient and mitzad the doctor. Number one. Number two, we see we now need rov kafo of other doctors to concur, who are consulted, that this is the only way to save this person. That's number two. Number three, the fact of the matter is that the success rate over here does not have to be a 50% success rate, but even if safik rachakum od, which is the term, then now with our Moshe coins, when he brings down the Achiezer, the famous Achiezer, of a family of Kavinsky of the 1900s, that he writes as well, that even a suffix rach miyod, when it comes to success, allows you to undertake this as a chance. But now we come to the crucial part of everything. And that is, what is the nature of the medical care you're using? And over here, the term that's used by the Gedolei HaPoskim, it has to be something categorized as a refuah beduka. I want to give you two interpretations of refuah beduka, and you'll see that the ramifications of these two definitions are mikatzel katzel. Let me first tell you what they are, and you'll see what I mean, because this has major ramifications in certain types of medical treatments today. The more popular interpretation of refuah beduka is one given by Rashi in the Sechtes Yoma. What's a refuah beduka? Tried and tested refuahs. So Rashi's quote is that the therapeutic efficacy of this medical treatment has already been established, has FDA approval, etc., etc. That's what I call the normal classical interpretation of the refuah beduka. The Rambam, however, over here, who himself was a practicing doctor, is very expansive in what a refuah beduka is. Listen to what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, you know what a refuah beduka is? Even an experimental therapy based on cogent scientific reasoning indicative of probable or possible success. That's a pretty expansive interpretation of a refuah beduka. This ain't an FDA-approved surgery or medicine yet. It could be stage one, stage two, stage three. You know, when you go for medical treatment in Sloan Kettering, there's things which are the refuah beduka, the FDA-approved things they start you on initially. And when they see that stuff ain't working on you, they say, well, hey, we got some new stuff coming down the pike. Now, they don't necessarily tell you whether this is trial level number one, trial level number two, or trial level number three. But one thing that's for sure, they're stepping out of the Rashi camp and they're going into the world of the Rambam camp. And logically, these special bullet treatments that go straight to the cancer and etc. And you're becoming the guinea pig over here. So depending whether you hold like Rashi or the Rambam, there'll be a shayla whether you can undergo these trial types of treatment. What I will tell you is what I see happening in the halachic world and the medical world today, that I would say by and large, out of the world of cancer, most of the time the refuahs are like Rashi's interpretation of refuah beduka, they have an FDA approval. When it comes to cancer treatment, for what I see today, and I saw it with myself in my own life, Allah HaShalom, and what goes on there, and I spoke to many medical people who are in the cancer business, they told me that when they do what they gotta do, since they're dealing with desperate types of activities, that this is the last chance this person has, and they're willing to do it, they're using the Rambam's definition, without a question. Especially if it's level one of the trial, not level two or three. And therefore, from what I see, when I was there, I saw a lot of people coming to the Sloan Kettering. All different types of Torah personalities were coming into this place for potential treatment, knowing that this is not the refuah beduka of Rashi, but this is the refuah beduka of the Rambam. It seems the minhag ha'olam is that when it comes to cancer treatment in particular, they're more expansive than what's considered refuah beduka, and people, they will prefer a trial 3 and trial 2 than a trial 1. But nevertheless, I haven't heard any poster coming out recently saying that if you go to Sloan Kettering, only a trial 3 and higher will I let you use, and not a trial 2 and 1. I never heard anybody passing that way. They're just sending you to the hospital because they say it's a world famous institution, etc., and have the best doctors there or specialists. But so what I'm pointing out to you is that even in this specific context, there was no FDA. And quite obviously speaking, whether the doctors in the Shus Yosef's time would even have the chutzpah to propose what the Rambam said, I doubt very much. So we have to assume that this was a tried and tested medical thing that was approved by whoever approved medicine at that time. Only problem is, most people died from it. But those who survived miraculously died because of it. But it was tried and tested, and they gave their approval, their appropriation. So according to Chazal, therefore, to use this type of deadly medical treatment, which is an option, is allowed if it has some chal Hashem of refuah beduka. If it doesn't even reach the Rambam's level, then you're basically looked upon as a tzeach, and the patient is committing suicide. How do I know this? If you go back now to page number 7, I have a quotation on the bottom from the Sefer Chassidim over here. I haven't read quotation D on page number 7. On page number 7 it says on the bottom the following. He says, Noshim hoyu lochos asavim, levashat achol of osa, in yichya shivas yamim yisrape, v'im lomos sheyumos v'teich hashiv yamim. So he says that there used to be women who used to prepare all types of medicinal cures. If they survived, they survived, and they lived. And if, basically, they didn't succeed, they died earlier than they would have survived, which meant they were masachin chaye shah for chaye olam. And therefore, he says, Allah lamasa, I want you to know, as he goes on, asidin liten adin shemisim ha'adam kedem zmana. The critique is, since he's jeopardized the chaye shah for chaye olam, you're going to be held in Shemayim culpable for curtailing human life. So how do you reconcile the Sefer Chassidim with the Psak of the Gemara and the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch? So the Gedolei HaPoskim answer very simple. These women were not using any type of food bedukah. This was, you know, third world, you know, voodoo medicine. So when you deal with that type of medicine, which has no logical, medical, rational shot, of course you can't do what you're doing over here. If they kill somebody, they kill them. The Rambam and the Rashi are dealing with a certain protocol. Whichever protocol, how broad you interpret it, but it has a din of a before. There the Gemara gave you permission to therefore sacrifice Chai Shefa Chai Olam. But there's one thing I want to finish with tonight, which I haven't defined. Rav Moshe has all tshuva upon this, as other people don't do. What is Chai Shefa? And what is Chaye Olam? I'm using the terms of the whole night. What's considered temporary life? And what's considered being able to obtain Chaye Olam? Nobody lives forever. At least not until Chiyas HaMeisim and Olam Haba. So everybody's in our self under the bubbles. So what's considered Chaye Olam? What's considered Chaye Shah? So Rav Moshe has a tshuva which he wrote, which I have with me here tonight. And he was asked a question by some other Gedolim, Rebbe, what do you paskin is Chai Shah versus Chai Olam? So he, at the end, he says that I will be maskin to what the Achiezer said, which Rav Chaim Moses said many years earlier. And that is, he says, Chai Shah means, like Shus Yaakov said, you have a couple of days to live. You can have a couple of months to live, let's say 6 months, whatever it is. If it's only it's less than a year that you have to live. He says, there is a darche tshuva in Yoredeya, quoting the Gadol of Shlomo Kluger, who says that we use the Gedarim of Treifus over here to define Chai Shah and Chai Olam. Those who are learning Chulin now, Daf Yomi Nekis now, that a Treifa doesn't live, at least it's not HaChazal, for more than 12 months. So whether you are a live entity or non-live entity depends upon 12 months of existence, whether you're dealing with animals or you're dealing with human beings. So says the Shlomo Kluger, Chai Ola means you're living longer than a year. Chai Yesha means a person or an animal that ain't going to survive 12 months. You're going to live less than a year. He says, if you're therefore sacrificing Chai Yesha, that a person could know about the year, like a dreifa, and you're going to allow them to live more than a year and a half, even two, that is allowed to sacrifice Chai Yeshua for the sake of Chai Yeshua. Because nobody's going to live forever. But if you're dealing with a person who can live a couple of months, so instead of living 6 months, you'll give them 9 months, or 10 months, or 11 months to live. But you ain't going to give them a year's life to live. That is being Misakin Chayeshah to Chayeshah, and that you're not allowed to do. And that's the Psak Rav Moshe gives. That's the Psak Rav Chaim Ozer gives.
The original Shiloh that was punished for Psak.
I know. And Rav Moshe mentions that as well in his Tshuva. And he says that despite what the Shus Yaakov says, before Rav Moshe even came into the face of this world, Rav Chaim Ozer says, Lach Bedafi, you're going to live two days. He said, even Afilo Shisha Chadashim, if you're going there, So Moshe says upon that, once you're extending 2 days to 6 months, so could obviously, so what does that mean? So the person Chai Shok, I mean, he's going to live 1 year and 2 years, Chai Olam means he's going to live for 50 years. I mean, what, you know what? So our Moshe comes to the conclusion based upon this Tach and Tshuva. Once you see how expansive a Chai Mazel is to go from 2 days to 6 months, to say that the Tach and Tshuva quotes that the Lomdus is, like Lashon of Kruger says, and that is the 12 month Kor HaMivcha. 12 months means up until 12 months, that's Chai Yeshua. More than 12 months is Chai Olam. That's the barometer that you can take the chance and do this. If you want to do this, if you don't do it, you're not going to be held culpable in Shemayim. If you do it and you succeed, Matov v'Manayim. If you do it and you don't succeed, you haven't done anything wrong. It's a hadak, it's a patient. Hashem gave you the rishus l'nof for the rabbis, and the kiddush is, even in this type of statistical study, you can misach nechashel chaya olam. That's the rutzon of the patient, as well as the full beduka. That's couple of rope, and this is the way to go. And but obviously, you're using the criteria we mentioned before. This is what halakha paskins. And have a good enough of it. Oh yeah, the story Hillcrest, which I'll end off with, is a very interesting story. But it also is a telling story because the story demonstrates what we as rabbanim have to face when it comes to paskins and shaylos. I had one of the balabustas, and she called me up and told me her husband's deathly ill in the hospital in Hillcrest, and that he basically is a very, very severe diabetic, and he's reached a level now that there's no way, when it comes to cleansing his body, that he can be hooked up to any machinery to clean him out anymore. They can't find any blood vessels that are left open in his body to give him that type of medical cleansing. So what they want to do is they want to take him onto an operating table and do a little mituach to see if they can discover some blood vessels they realized were still available. And they basically told her that they can't guarantee success over here, like a Chai Yeshua versus Chai Ola, and that if they find, then they'll be able to, but obviously do what they have to do to clean him out and give him more life. If they don't succeed, it could be he'll die in the operating table, and once in a while, he would have survived normally, so the shalas chai shah chai ayla. So I immediately ran to the hospital, and I said, I'd like to see the supervisory doctor that was telling this information to this Bible Buzzfeed. So I went into a private room with the doctor, and I asked him the following question. I said to him, I hear the options over here, he told me. He reaffirmed what he told her. But I want to ask you one question. How many times have you already done this exploratory procedure, and how successful have you been in the past that you're now recommending this to her as an option? So he looked at me, and he says, I have to admit to you, you never did this before. So I said, so what you're telling me now is, which you didn't tell the family, is you want to use him as an experiment. You know, it's never been tried before. All the portals are closed. There's no reason to expect they might find one miraculously in there. And you want to cut him open as a frog, and maybe it might be succeed, but very unlikely. You didn't tell her that. You basically said that this is an option available, as if this was a tried, tested option. So when I heard that, I realized we're not dealing over here with the Rapul of the Dukkha. We're not dealing with, forget about Rashi. We're not even dealing with the Rambam's Rapul of the Dukkha. They wanted to use this as a carbon to see maybe, you know, they'll get a good reputation by doing something miraculous nobody ever did before. So upon hearing that, I realized there's no legs to stand upon. And if I said to the wife, what they want to do, you're not going to have your husband get off that operating table. So I would suggest let's create for them a home hospice. They at least have him as long as God wants him to be here, and they'll have his loving family around him because he still had cognizance, his mind was still functioning. And she listened to me, and we set up a home hospice for her. And for the next week and a half, basically speaking, the kids and the family were there, and they're davening with them each and every day, and he was physically awake enough to have tefillin put on, and to daven, and they sang with him, and whatever it is. He never started to see, because his kidneys weren't working, convulsions starting to break out, because the body was ended up poisoning itself, because there's nothing else to be mad anymore. But at least he was alive for another week and a half. If he would have been on that operating table, the Levi would have been basically the next day. So you have to be very careful and know when and where, and you have to be very, very forceful to ask the question, you know, is this a little fool to do, according to somebody's opinion or not? They weren't willing to reveal that to her, because she didn't even to ask the question. This happened in Hillcrest, and she never ever forgot what I did for her. She still had Tamida. She moved from Hillcrest later on to the five towns, and she still comes to my women's shiurim Tuesday morning, because she feels the pressure that I at least gave her a week and a half more of life with her husband, where if she would have listened to them, she wouldn't even have had that type of...
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.